Chapter 10. The periodical visits which I force myself to pay Professor Antel are a more and more painful duty. He is still in the Institute, but he has had to be moved from the fairly comfortable cell where I had arranged for him to be kept. He was pining away there, and from time to time gave vent to outbursts of temper which made him dangerous. He attempted to bite his warders. So Cornelius then tried out another system. He had him put in an ordinary straw-lined cage and gave him a mate, the girl with whom he used to sleep in the zoo. The professor welcomed her noisily with an animal demonstration of joy, and immediately his manner changed. He has now taken on a new lease of life. It is in her company that I now find him. He appears to be quite happy. He has put on weight and looks younger. I have done all I can to enter into communication with him. I try again today, but without success. He is interested only in the cakes I offer him. When the bag is empty, he goes back and lies down beside his mate, who starts licking his face. Now you see how intelligence can melt away, just as it can be acquired, someone behind me mutters. It is Cornelius. He is looking for me, but not to talk about the professor. There is something serious he wants to discuss. I follow him into the office, where Zira is waiting. Her eyes are red, as though she has been weeping. They seem to have bad news for me, but neither of them dares to speak. My son?
He's very well, Zira abruptly says. Too well, Cornelius mutters with a frown.
I know he is a splendid baby, but it is a month since I last saw him. The security measures have been tightened still more. Zira, who is suspect to the authorities, is under close surveillance.
Much too well, Cornelius repeats. He smiles, he cries like a baby monkey, and he has begun to talk. At 3 months of age. Baby words, but there's everything to indicate that he will talk properly later. In fact, he is miraculously precocious. I am delighted. Zira is annoyed by my doting father manner.
But don't you realize this is a disaster? The others will never leave him in liberty.
I know from a reliable source that some extremely important decisions are going to be taken about him by the Grand Council, which is to meet in 2 weeks' time, Cornelius quietly remarks.
Important decisions?
Very important. There's no question of doing away with him, not for the moment at least, but he'll be taken away from his mother.
And I, wouldn't I be allowed to see him?
You, least of all.
No, don't interrupt me, the chimpanzee goes on forcefully.
We didn't come here to feel sorry for ourselves, but to work out a plan of action. Well now, I've got some definite information. Your son is going to be placed in a sort of fortress under the surveillance of the orangutans. Yes, Zaius has been intriguing for some time, and he is going to get the better of us.
At this point Cornelius clenches his fist in rage and mutters some ugly oaths. Then he goes on.
Needless to say, the council knows perfectly well how little that old fool's scientific views can be trusted, but they are pretending to believe he is more qualified than I am to study this exceptional subject, because the latter is regarded as a danger to our race. They are counting on Zaius to make it impossible for him to do any harm.
I am dumbfounded.
It is not possible to leave my son in the hands of that dangerous imbecile,
but Cornelius has not yet finished.
It's not only the child that is menaced.
I remain speechless and look at Zira, who hangs her head.
The orangutans hate you, because you are the living proof of their scientific aberrations, and the gorillas consider you too dangerous to be left in liberty much longer. They are frightened you might found a new race on this planet. But apart from this eventuality, they are frightened your mere example might sow unrest among the men. Unusual nervousness has been reported among the Wands with whom you are dealing.
This is true. In the course of my last visit to the room with the cages, I noticed a marked change among the men. It was as though some mysterious instinct had notified them of the miraculous birth. They greeted my appearance with a concert of howls. "Not to mince matters," Cornelius abruptly concludes, "I'm very much afraid that within the next 2 weeks the council might decide to eliminate you, or at least remove a part of your brain on the pretext of some experiment. As for Nova, I believe it will be decided to put her out of the way as well because she has been in such close contact with you." It's not possible. I, who believed myself entrusted with a semi-divine mission, I feel I am once again the most wretched creature living, and give way to the most dreadful despair. Zira puts her hand on my shoulder.
Cornelius is quite right not to have concealed anything from you. But what he has not told you is that we shan't abandon you. We have decided to save all three of you, and will be helped by a small group of brave chimpanzees. What can I do, the only member of my species? You must get away. You must leave this planet to which you should never have come. You must go back to where you belong, on Earth. Your son's safety and your own demand it.
Her voice breaks, as though she's on the verge of tears. She is even more attached to me than I thought. I am also deeply upset, no less at her sorrow than at the prospect of leaving her forever. But how to escape from this planet? Cornelius has a plan. "It's true," he says. "I've promised Zira to help you escape, and so I shall, even if it means losing my job. I shall thus feel I have not evaded my duty as a monkey. For if danger threatens us, it will be avoided by your return to Earth. You once said, I believe, that your spacecraft was still intact and could take you home." "Without the slightest doubt. It contains enough fuel, oxygen, and supplies to take us to the edge of the universe, but how am I to reach it?" "It's still orbiting round our planet. An astronomer friend of mine has tracked it down and knows every detail of its trajectory. As to the means of reaching it, now listen. In exactly 10 days' time, we are going to launch a manned artificial satellite, manned by humans, of course, on whom we want to experiment the effects of certain rays. No, don't interrupt. The number of passengers will be limited to 3. One man, one woman, and one child."
I grasp his scheme in a flash and appreciate his ingenuity. But what obstacles will have to be overcome?
"Some of the scientists responsible for this launching are friends of mine, and I've won them over to your cause. The satellite will be placed on the trajectory of your craft and will be navigable within certain limits. The human couple have been trained to carry out certain motions through conditioned reflexes. I think you'll be still more skillful than they are. For this is our plan. You three will take the place of the passengers. That shouldn't be too difficult. As I said, I've already got the necessary accomplices. Chimpanzees regard assassination with repugnance. The others won't even notice the trick that's played on them."
This, indeed, is more than likely. To most of the monkeys, a man is a man and nothing more. The differences between one individual and another do not strike them. "I'll put you through an intensive course of training during these 10 days. Do you think you'll be able to board your craft?"
"It ought to be possible. But it's not the difficulties and dangers I'm thinking about at the moment. I cannot shake off the melancholy which assailed me just now at the thought of leaving the planet Sorrow, Zira, and my fellows. Yes, my fellow humans. Towards them I regard myself in the nature of a deserter. Yet above all I must save my son and Nova. But I shall come back. Yes, later. I swear it on the heads of the captives in the cages, I shall come back with trump cards in my hand. I am so bewildered that I voice these thoughts of mine out loud." Cornelius smiles. "In 4 or 5 years of your time, your traveling time, but in more than 1,000 years as far as we stay-at-homes are concerned, don't forget that we too have discovered relativity. In the meantime, I've discussed the risk with my chimpanzee friends, and we've decided to take it. We part after making arrangements to meet on the following day. Zira goes out first. Remaining behind with Cornelius for a moment, I take the opportunity of thanking him with all my heart. Inwardly, I'm wondering why he is doing all this for me. He reads my thoughts.
Zira's the one you ought to thank, he says. It's to her you will owe your life. On my own, I don't know if I should have gone to so much trouble or taken so many risks. But she would never forgive me for being a party to murder. And anyway...
He pauses. Zira is waiting for me in the corridor outside. He makes sure she cannot hear and quickly whispers,
Anyway, for her as well as for me, it is better that you should vanish from this planet.
He closes the door after me as I leave the room. I'm alone with Zira, and we take a few steps along the corridor.
Zira!
I stop and take her in my arms. She is as upset as I am. I see a tear coursing down her muzzle while we stand locked in a tight embrace.
Ah, what matter this horrid material exterior? It is her soul that communes with mine.
I shut my eyes so as not to see this grotesque face made uglier still by emotion. I feel her shapeless body tremble against mine. I force myself to rub my cheek against hers. We are about to kiss like lovers, when she gives an instinctive start and thrusts me away with violence. While I stand there speechless, not knowing what attitude to adopt, she hides her head in her long hairy paws, and this hideous she-monkey bursts into tears and announces in despair,
Oh, darling, it's impossible. It's a shame, but I can't. You are really too unattractive.